Welcome to the Ask a Spiritual Director podcast, a podcast not of questions and answers, but of questions and explorations about all things related to the spiritual life. I'm Kimberly Pelletier.
And I'm Samuel Ogles.
And this is your special episode, our interlude episode between season one and season two, about how to survive the holidays Enneagram style. It's a little extra long because we wanted to go through all the numbers and not just our favorites.
We didn't shortchange a single number.
And just kidding, we don't have favorites. We didn't. And so stick with us. It's a good one. And pass it along to your friends. I hope you all, or at least people you want to hear when you hear their number and you want them to hear that, just pretend that it's your genuine love for them, but it's your way of changing and controlling them for the holidays. Just kidding. This is a long introduction.
And we'll be back with season two shortly, which is indeed coming. We're getting really excited for it.
Yeah. So stay tuned. And thank you for all of you who are listening. You guys, since we have ended season one and are waiting to start season two, we have had a tremendous amount of more listeners.
Yeah. So people are still listening. New episodes are not dropping and people are still listening.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So thank you for passing it along. Thank you for sharing with your friends, your family, your directees, your spiritual director friends and peers and pastors and counselors and all that. So we're thrilled and we're excited for more. So don't worry. We're coming. We're still here. So surviving the holidays, Enneagram style.
Yeah.
This is good.
And that's probably the title of the episode, but modifying it, surviving / thriving in the holidays. Because some of these, I think, that we've talked about are going to be challenges that aren't necessarily just about keeping your head down and like getting through whatever's going on, but are actually about where's an invitation for you in this, which seems to fit with the theme of the Ask a Spiritual Director
podcast. It does, right?
Yeah.
Where's the invitation in that situation or feeling or experience?
Yeah. So I'm curious with you, Kimberly, where you were the one who had the idea for this like interlude podcast episode, which I think is great. So talk to me about, you know, where that came from.
Yeah, it's entirely selfish. I wanted to see what you would say. And I want to learn for free all of the good things you know about the Enneagram. No, really, I think the Enneagram is such a helpful, it's popular, I think it's popular because it's so helpful in transforming our big picture of who we are in our life and then also the nitty-gritty of our daily grind and our relationships. And that is never more relevant than around the holidays, it seems, with people. And so I thought, with a resident expert here in our as a co-host of the podcast, I thought it would be great to really dive into a few, you know, all the numbers, or at least get a good, like a quick deep dive, you know, in these numbers, into each one, and have something that's helpful and relevant for wherever anyone finds themselves. And I think some people, they are going to be looking for how do I survive? And some people are looking for how do I thrive? And there's no, I don't know that there's necessarily a judgment or a right or wrong in that. Depending on our relationships and our dynamics, what has changed in our families or friendships, what losses or griefs or traumas we've experienced this year, surviving could be a very good goal. And or thriving could be something we really are ready to reach for. And so I think we'll have a smattering of all of that in here and really create a lot of space, which is another spiritual director thing to do. Just create a lot of space for wherever people find themselves. That this isn't like try harder, do more during the holidays. This is slow down and be present and catch up to yourself and then go at whatever pace you need to do to be the healthiest you're capable of right now. Which doesn't mean you're healthiest. If you can actually be your absolute healthiest that you could ever possibly be,
right?
It really is an invitation to whatever your capacity is right now, right? Out of kind of going around the circle here on the Enneagram.
Yeah.
Where can you move a notch? What do you need?
Yeah. So. Yeah. I love that framing of it, sort of away from the frantic nature of the season, as it often is for many of us, and into sort of that more soulful place and a time of like gentle noticing. That's a phrase that I've heard a lot of recently. So just hopefully it's an invitation for you, whatever Enneagram type you are, for gentle noticing for yourself. Yeah. And primarily that for you, hopefully, but then also maybe just to build some compassion for those people in your life who you know do or might fall within, you know, one of the Enneagram types we go over. Not so that you can try to fix them or turn them on in this episode necessarily, although we'd welcome that. But just that you can go, there are people dealing with very different burdens than I'm dealing with in different ways. And maybe there's a place for me to sort of find a place of connection with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're interacting with their inner self in a unique way, right? Which is kind of what we carry. We carry ourselves around wherever we go.
Yes.
And so we walk into that party and we walk into that family gathering. We walk into our work party, you know, whatever we're doing, we're carrying ourselves. And so, yeah, to have a gentle noticing. It's funny you say that because I have an article coming out next week on the 19th of December about following Jesus into radical self-love. And I use that same phrase because I think maybe it's just whether it's something I've heard of or just trying to practice or whatever it is, it is something I think that's growing in awareness and that's that need. So hopefully this, this whole episode is able to just, bring that gentle noticing for everybody. So
that's great. Where's that article coming out?
It's called The Art of Tela.
Okay.
It's a website. It's a newer website. And they're kind of, I don't even know. I don't want to like wrongly give a tagline to their whole website, but it's neat. I would check it out and I'll go back whenever this airs. I'll go back when the article actually publishes and I'll put an a link there in the show notes. They just talk about lots of different, their whole month of December is about radical something. They talk about immigration. I've read articles with them about public schools, like really pushing the boundaries on the way, Christ followers think and like opening themselves up to other ways of seeing and being in the world.
Oh, that's really cool.
So I really appreciate the way they're push that and
I look forward to reading that article.
Yeah, thanks. I'm excited.
That sounds great.
About it.
Some gentle noticing coming your way. Yeah. So yeah, we'll definitely put a link to at least that website as a placeholder, and then when the article comes out, we can update it.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be great.
Well, for those of you listening for the first time, you may not know that Sam here is a Enneagram expert and does workshops and writing and teaching on the Enneagram. So he will do most of the talking. and I'll just be here to hang around and say little things that either are relevant or irrelevant. You decide.
Well, we both use the Enneagram. I think it's fair to say use the Enneagram a lot.
Yes.
Not only as a tool for our own spiritual journeys and journeys through life, but as a tool for spiritual direction, specifically when we're in that space and holding that space with a traveler sitting across from us.
Yeah, that's very true. I do use it a lot in my practice. So,
we're both well-versed in a lot of the Enneagram types. Yeah. And we both actually, we're going to start with ones.
Yes.
Not only because it makes sense numerically, but because I identify as dominant in type one. Mm-hmm. You identify as an Enneagram type one.
Yeah.
It's a good place. It's a good place to start. And maybe if we can kind of tackle our own issues, we'll have a little more grace to go there for other people.
Or we'll just tell you all the right and wrong ways to do things because we're ones. just kidding.
For sure. maybe just like a little bit of framing before we go into it. So we're not going to go into like this is not an intro to the Enneagram
right.
episode. We're not describing sort of the system altogether. We're assuming there's some sort of knowledge of your own type or the types in general, but
you're acquainted with it.
Yeah.
Unhealth and health.
Yeah.
Kind of each number's on the spectrum.
Yeah. And if you don't know the Enneagram, we will post maybe one or two links to good resources where you could get that introductory level knowledge and that baseline.
Including to Sam's newsletter, because he writes about all these numbers. So you can sign up for that and get a great primer and or get go to his website. So
yeah, thanks. I was not trying to tee you up for that one.
But I'm looking forward because I really like it. I think it's been good.
Yeah, thanks.
It's been good reading. I've passed it along, actually. I've sent links and emails to people. So.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. I'm doing a series on the virtues of the Enneagram, and there's like a different kind of theological virtue associated with each different number. And it's been really fun. I think I'm four types out of nine so far, and the fifth one will come out later this month.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Before Christmas.
It's really reflective. It's just deeper than other things I've read. It's just a particular angle, maybe. And I've just appreciated your angle. So,
yeah. Thanks for saying that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, to kind of also frame this conversation, obviously all of these practices we're going to talk about are like gentle noticings or different approaches that you can take with your own type. They all require some level of self-awareness, obviously. And, and I think it's fair to say, we assume if you're listening to this podcast, you have that level.
Yeah.
But I tend to think like everyone does, where it's all to different degrees and it's in different seasons and moments, but everyone does. If you've ever been caught in like, you've gone to your spouse or a friend after, right after you've said something, you go, you know, I shouldn't have said that. I was acting out of this space, or I'm really sorry. I don't mean that at all. I just was feeling frustrated. If you've ever done that, then you know you have that level of self-awareness.
Yes.
Right. And reflection.
Yeah. It doesn't mean you catch yourself in the middle of every moment ever and are actually able to catch it and perfect it. It's just, you have that awareness, you come back and you, that's a great way to say that.
Yeah. And the other thing I just wanted to be sure to mention is that we're talking about these things, but we're taking into account there are existing factors outside of that, like healthy boundaries, safe people.
Yes.
We're not talking about having to try to practice this in like abusive environments.
Oh, goodness. I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah. That's really important.
Yeah. So we want you to sort of keep all of those healthy, good self-care initiatives kind of going on in your mind as you're going through some of these things. We're not asking you to do anything that would be like harmful to yourself, to yourself in that way, even if we're asking you to do some stretching in a healthy way.
Yeah. There's a good, just to slide in before you jump into number one, just some resources. There's books out there on safe people and that, but there's that, you know, book that's, it's a little tiny book called Safe People. I can't remember, was it Henry Cloud or John Townsend?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Cloud's the Boundaries book, but maybe he wrote that one.
He might have wrote that one, or the guy
I'm not
wrote
sure.
with. Yeah. I'll put it in the show notes too.
Oh,
it's just
great.
A good, I think, for anybody who's struggling with that and hasn't heard about how do I decipher some of these things. You know, we say something and it sounds like, wow, that feels like I have to go back and I have to let someone have more space in my life than they should. If that's ever a feeling you have while we're saying something around your number.
Yeah,
I would encourage you to go back and just do a little work around having safe people in your life and what that means.
Yes,
because it's really that important.
Yeah,
to not
and to think about, to keep in mind the difference between like safe doesn't necessarily mean someone who doesn't like challenge you or say things that are hard to hear.
Right,
but hopefully a safe person is someone who, they might hurt your ego, but they don't hurt your dignity or something like that.
Yeah, that's a good way to say that.
Yeah.
So,
cool.
All right,
let's dive into
it. Let's give it to the ones.
Okay. So we'll kind of, for each type, we'll try to go over a few different things I've come up with, and we'll talk about how you might work with that. So for ones, type one, ones need to remember that they try to get their needs met by meeting the prescribed expectations of others. Mm-hmm. So over the course of our lives as ones, we develop this sort of like inner rule system that's kind of a mix of what we think God's expectations are and our own expectations for ourselves, and then external expectations that we've somehow internalized from other people. And we have a really hard time like judging between all of those.
What's what?
Yeah. They all feel like the voice of God of like, if you don't do this, you are not okay.
Yeah.
So just recognizing that that is true, that we all struggle with that. And that it's the expectation you're sensing isn't necessarily like an objective expectation that you have to meet in order to be okay or good or lovable or worthy of God and his promises. So that's a really good thing to keep in mind. And so I think the challenge would be, what would it look like to let go of that, to let go of thinking that your expectations are like the universe's expectations, right? For yourself and other people.
Yeah. Like it's the absolute, this is how it needs to be in order to be healthy, be right, do it well.
And then to, you know, to maybe say, like to risk asking for what you need, like what would it look like for you to risk asking for what you need? So I'm feeling vulnerable about what I shared. You know, just saying that often will get people to go, oh, well, you don't need to be, or
that
was really tender, you know, some sort of response that might reassure you, but kind of risking that, I think, is really important for once.
That's good. It takes, and it takes some ability to slow down, not ability. It takes some willingness to slow down and be aware of what needs are, particularly in this season, depending on all that you're juggling, to even be aware of what you need, especially if you're just as a one living to meet expectations. What you need can become irrelevant because the expectations are what they are. So what I need doesn't really matter. Meeting the expectations, it's what matters.
Yeah.
And so for a one to carve out little spaces in there to be aware generally of what do they need, whether it's in that day or that time of the, that part of the day or that week or for a particular event might be helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great point. I think that's really right on.
Yeah, I might, I might live that.
Yeah.
I might need to live that.
We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll reconvene in 4 weeks.
Right. And see, see how that went. I guess I might need to live that is what I'm saying. That, that ability to pay attention to what we need amidst expectations that feel like absolute.
Absolutely.
So that's really good, Sam.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay. So a second one for ones would be consider something like some sort of like mantra for you in this holiday season to talk to your inner critic or to be aware of the judgments that you're having of going, that person shouldn't be doing that. My mother's embarrassing me. my sister's not raising that kid right or whatever it is. Right. So having some sort of like mantra that you can say, that's not me. That's my inner critic. That's not me. Right. Some sort of distinction of that. There are different types like fours sort of think they are their feelings, right?
It
takes some uncoupling to try to get that objectivity, and ones sort of think they are their judgments. Yeah. So that's a hard thing to do, but if you can go, that's the inner critic, that's not me.
Yeah.
That's super, super helpful. I've found that to be helpful for myself.
Yeah.
For sure.
And that mantra, I like that. Can you say it again?
Yeah. You can go, that's my inner critic. That's not me. Or reverse it.
Right.
However, or some other natural language that feels right to you. Like, that's my judgment. That's not me. That's not who I am.
Yeah.
Or that's not who I choose to be.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
I like that.
The last thing maybe for ones to consider, when you get stuck, and all the types get stuck in their own ways, but for ones, it's often becoming hypercritical, resentful, feeling burdened, a lack of like lightness. It's hard to like laugh and take things breezily,
right?
You know, that sort of thing. So when you feel yourself getting stuck in your type, whatever that looks like for you, stop, take a breath and ask yourself, what is really needed here? So Suzanne Stabile, you know, says we're ones are thinking repressed, and that's true of ones, twos, and sixes. So we all feel like we're doing a lot of thinking, but it's not actually productive thinking for any of those types.
Ouch.
Right. And so for the one, I feel like I'm thinking all the time, But Stabile says that it's actually like an inner dialogue with your inner critic is not actually thinking.
Oh,
right.
That's brutal.
It stings.
It is.
Yeah.
Wow. I think I'm going to have to think about that a lot.
Yeah.
I haven't really process.
Yeah. So always trying to like negotiate that, like, did I measure up? Did I do well enough? Yeah. What should I have done? What should I do tomorrow?
Yeah.
That is not actually productive thing, she says. Yeah. So try to think like, what is really mine to do here? Like what's really needed here? Those are clarifying questions to hopefully try to kind of lightly push you out of that constant dialogue that just never ends and isn't actually getting you anywhere.
Right. Except more frustrated and heavier feeling. I like that you say that lightness.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you find yourself unable to just kind of enter in and have some joy, despite all the things that people are wrong or people who are around you are doing wrong or incorrect or living their life or around the dinner or with that game or whatever.
Yeah.
Right. Like just being able to enter in and be with it all exactly as it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that presence for sure.
Yeah.
You want to move on to twos?
Yeah, let's do it. You just gave it to the ones pretty good. So I expected that would be the harshest.
So so twos. Twos, like the ones, need to recognize that they think they'll be okay if they meet others' expectations. Mm-hmm. So twos would really benefit from spending some time before they interact with anyone, asking themselves, what do I need? Like, what do I need in this season? Or what do I need before I go to this family gathering? Because otherwise I think twos can sort of get in the habit of like, well, I'm doing all the food and I'm watching the kids or I'm filling the gaps that other adults are leaving or whatever it is. Yeah. But having an idea of like, what do I need from this? Mm-hmm. It's so, so hard for twos and it's so healthy for them because otherwise eventually that resentment of everything you're putting out and not getting back will catch up to you as a two.
Because the twos are going to be more prone to noticing everybody's needs, right? And filling those things without whether they're asked or not.
Absolutely.
Right. And
Yeah. And that's actually the second one is that a lot of people can feel like kind of invaded by the twos, quote unquote, helpfulness.
Right.
And they often are extremely helpful and giving and
very aware. Outwardly aware.
Totally.
Right, it sounds like from what you're saying.
Yes. Yeah. Like you said, like they kind of have the sixth sense for picking up on needs. Mm-hmm. So they're very outwardly aware. And if they are not like asking permission to offer their help to people, it can feel very intrusive often. And eventually people either pick up on it and they don't like it. So they kind of put up a boundary or they might even like lash out or distance themselves further from the relationship. Which is only more hurtful to the sensitive too, who's just trying to kind of meet some sort of need.
Right.
Yeah.
Who then feels slighted and what all I was trying to do is help. And
So that's a good thing for twos to keep in mind. So you can fix that and not be too intrusive by going, would it be helpful if, how would you feel if I, you know, I thought I might do this. How does that sound to you?
Yeah.
Those sorts of questions really put the agency back on the other person.
Yeah. That's really good.
Yeah.
From the, let's just say from some relationships I have in my life and people who have relationships with twos who are more unaware, that seems like it would be so helpful. I mean, if that question had been posed in some situations, it could have avoided a lot of strife. But not only that question being posed, but that question being the answer being respected. So if a two is going to pose that question, the answer may be, no, I'm okay. I'm fine. I don't need that. Right. And for two to be able to say, okay, and to know this doesn't have any bearing on who you are or that they care about you or that they love you or that you belong and you have a right to be there just like everybody else.
For sure.
That just, they just literally don't need that or don't want that.
Yeah.
And that's the literal period. End of story.
Yes.
You're still okay.
Yeah. The rejection of your help is not the rejection of you.
Yes.
Totally.
Yeah.
That's really well said.
So.
Yeah. Good point. So maybe a final one for twos would be, you know, consider finding, there are probably a lot of different gatherings or outings or events in this sort of next month. And so consider maybe picking one of those and having it, having the plan in place where you're just going to go and you're just going to like be, and you're going to take off your service hat.
Oh, yeah.
Like you're going to be the one who's sitting in the living room, having a good time with a conversation and a cocktail, right? not in the kitchen doing the chores. So find a way to sort of like intentionally choose that for yourself and then like live into that. That's kind of a stretching thing, I think.
Yeah. That's for a good twos. Stretch.
But it would be a good stretch, I think.
And just one. I like how you said, just pick one.
Yeah.
Don't try and do this every time. That's too much.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. Baby steps.
Yeah.
Always.
Always.
Yeah. Great. So for threes.
Yeah.
So a question for threes might be, you know, what would it look like to be radically, fearfully honest with someone this season? Mm. Right. What would it look like to actually kind of let someone in? And I was reading this, I know this, this acquaintance of mine, she's an author. Her name is Gina Butz, B-U-T-Z.
Oh yeah.
You know Gina?
She's in my Writer's Guild.
Oh, great. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I met her, earlier this year, actually, okay. And I'm getting to know her, but, I've seen some of her writing online. And so she just wrote this thing about the difference between transparency and vulnerability and how transparency, like in Christian circles, is like the pastor gets up and gives a sermon about a really hard time in her or his life. Mm-hmm. And then, but the good news is like, at least I got through it or whatever. It's not actually happening now.
Right.
That's transparency. Uh-huh. And vulnerability would be like, hey, I'm going through something right now.
Yeah.
This is what I'm in the midst of.
Good distinction.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, so for threes, kind of maybe recognizing that like risking not just transparency, which probably is hard for threes, but even vulnerability, like how do you let a safe person into that kind of space and be honest about what you're feeling, what's hard and what's not working or a fear or something.
Where you feel like you might not be measuring up.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That's the key.
Yeah.
Well said. So, let's see. And then another one for threes might be, another like mantra for them would be, I am as good this year as I was last year because my goodness has not changed at all. Like, which I think, when I came up with that, it sounds kind of weird, but I think the beauty of it is it takes the three, it intentionally undercuts all of the achievement that they've been trying to build over the last 12 months.
Right.
Right. Just kind of say, in the grand scheme of things, I'm just as worthy now as I was 12 months ago. Right. It's fine that I occupied my time and I did things and I accomplished things or whatever, but it doesn't actually affect like the deeper things. It doesn't actually affect the worth they have. So that's hard for threes to grasp.
Yeah.
It's hard for us who are not threes to kind of put ourselves in that space, but I think that kind of realization is really helpful.
Say all the things all my 2019 goals that were achieved, and every one of them were, or at least moved toward as a three, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or at least, on the way, or they've morphed, but I have them in my sights still. Yeah. None of those have any bearing on my worthiness and love. I love that's good.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah. Good. So fours.
You know, before we go on, I have something I actually want to add to the threes.
Yeah.
I have a directee who's a three. Mm. And this person, for this person, redefining success within family relationships was a very transformational idea. For this person, there was a way in which they were entering a lot of family situations with a goal in mind. Right? Like a three is going to come in going, I hope this happens. This has been a longstanding problem. Maybe this time when we're together, whether it's for a vacation or an afternoon, we're going to move toward this. I'm going to help bring this in and motivated by love, but also ego, right? That wants to, has a goal in mind for how this situation can change. And this person was continually disappointed because those goals were not being met because when you're talking about family dynamics, there's so much that's out of your control.
Yeah. And the person wasn't responding in the way that the three,
the hoped. Several people were, right? No one was, it wasn't happening. So in their mind, they were just discouraged and feeling like I can't do this. And what's wrong? I have a goal to me. And they love these people, right? That's part of in their own heart. This is why there's this motivation, right? And we're blind to the way that's our own, control or ego and all that. It's all a mix. It's not like it's all that, obviously. But each of us in our own number, we have our own blind spots. And so in this one for the three, we just kind of talked about what does that look like to redefine success when you enter into these family situations? And this person redefined success for themselves. And it sounded instead of bringing healing, all good things, right? I want healing. I want to change these dynamics. I want everyone to be respected and heard and really important, like truly important things. But when this person let go of that control and realize, if I gauge success on, I can listen, I can love, I can be attentive to, I can be present, you know, all of these. And then it became, this person was repeatedly successful because it was all things that they could control in a healthy way. And so when they entered into those family situations, they were focusing on what they could control and they were, you know, good things, listening, presence, love, caring.
Yeah.
Right. And so it satiated that part of them that needed, I need to have something to focus on. I need to have a goal. You know, what does success look like? Yeah. And so, yeah, I just offered that. It's been really transformational to me to watch my directee go through that and go, wow, that was really an important shift. So I just offer that.
That's really powerful. Actually, it's hitting me in this moment because there's a situation in my own life where I am just realizing right now I'm defining success by like fixing it, you know,
right.
Having it end up right. You know, I guess in my one framework. And so what would it look like to redefine that as maybe like success in that situation wouldn't be fixing it or getting that person to change, but it would be getting to like speak my truth or something like that, or have integrity with my own self, something that's within my control, like you said.
That's really good. And it's an important shift.
Yeah.
And it puts us in control of what we can and should control. And we can let go of what we can't, which is really hard, but it helps when you define it.
That's really good. I like that a lot. Great. So fours, I always have a hard time with the fours because I say this, it's a big enough thing that I feel like I always have to like say it. It's like one of those, I don't know, self-conscious spots, but I'm like, the fours are the hardest type for me to put my four hat on and understand and wrap my head around. And I think Suzanne Stabile might say that they're the most complex on the Enneagram too.
Yeah.
It kind of makes sense.
But I have some dear fours in my life. I could see that.
Yeah, me too. One thing that Stabile says for fours, she says, when you start to feel yourself being a victim, don't, which sounds...
End of sentence.
Which reminds me of like this old comedy sketch where this person came into a psychologist's office and they're like, you know, I have this like fear of being trapped in the elevator. I'm claustrophobic and I kind of freak out. And the person's like, well, you know, I think that I have something that might help you if, you know, if you're open to hearing it. And they're like, yeah, please. And he goes, well, stop it. He just starts shouting, stop it at this person. And it kind of feels like that. But but I think it's the four energy that it's really easy to withdraw, right? And to sort of assume like, I don't have a place here. I'm not valued here. I'm missing something. That person has something I don't. I wish I could experience what I'm seeing, what I perceive other people to be experiencing. Stabile says, try to like kind of nip that in the bud and notice when you start to go down into an unhealthy state and then try to shift to action. So the...
Okay. I was going to say, so what do they do instead?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's just hard to...
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So, you know, fours, fives, and nines, all the withdrawing types are action repressed. And so it's really helpful for them and healthy to shift into that kind of like mode of acting. So for fours, I think that would look like, I have a good four friend who says, when I sort of notice I'm down in that spot, like I have to go for a walk. I have to get up. I have to get out of the house. I have to start working on a project. Like I have to sort of like get out of it. Otherwise the temptation is to kind of rework those feelings, stay in that state. Swirl.
Yeah.
I like that. So that, I think that can be really helpful for fours to keep in mind. Another one, I guess on that same line, fours will naturally withdraw or want to withdraw around the holidays. So what would it look like for you as a four to kind of psych yourself up and go into a gathering like fully engaged? Sort of like how the two is going to pick one gathering to kind of just be like doing their thing, kind of selfishly meeting their needs.
Yeah.
maybe quote, it was before.
Quote unquote selfishly. So,
yeah. Right. Yes. Sorry. Thank you for the quote. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
You're not selfish right. to meet your needs, twos.
Exactly. So what would it look like for a four to do the same thing, to sort of like pick a gathering where they would go in and say, all right, I'm going to like fully go in and engage. Like I have a mm-hmm. place here. Mm-hmm. I'm wanted here. Mm-hmm. I'm needed here and I have something to offer here. Mm-hmm. And just kind of like believe that for that 3 hour period yeah. and do your best and try it on and see how mm-hmm. it goes. So
that's, yeah. Do you have a mantra? Did you write one for them out of curiosity?
Actually I do.
Yeah. So, I like that. So I'm thinking, okay, what can they just put in their head?
Yeah. So I guess it's kind of just that it's, I have a place here. I'm wanted here. I have something to offer here.
Hmm.
I think it's really good. Keep that in mind. And it's true.
It's true, right?
Yeah.
I belong.
True. Yeah.
Just as everybody else.
Yeah, exactly.
Hmm. I'm not missing anything.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's not something fundamentally wrong with me.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm just thinking I'm hearing the fours in my own heart. And there are things, you know. I'm like, yeah. Nothing.
Yeah, that's right. Hmm. Yeah. Exactly.
That's really good.
And then the final one for fours would be another mantra, which is sort of like how the one says, I have judgments, but I'm not my judgments. The four was, I have feelings, I'm not my feelings. Mm. I think Ian Cron describes it as like you're sitting on the mountain and like the storm is raging around you. Like you're the mountain, you're not the storm kind of thing. And trying to remember that is really, it's hard and totally worthwhile.
Yeah.
Once you start to tap into it.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, that's good. I imagine that's hard to, can be challenging to nuance, but the more practice there is.
Yeah.
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 It becomes.
Yeah. And that you don't have to like not feel feelings.
Right.
As a
that
would four. Be,
that couldn't happen as a four.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
That's impossible.
It's an impossibility. Yeah. Yeah.
So to be able to fully feel them and to not like cling to them any longer than they need to be there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. So moving on to fives. Mm-hmm. Okay, so for fives, what would it look like for you to risk vulnerability this holiday season? So of all the Enneagram types, the fives, it requires the most of fives to show up in a relationship. Mm. It requires the most energy. It's the hardest for them to actually expel energy and expend energy.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes a lot out of them to do that. So how can you commit to doing that? Because it is so important for you to show up and have relationship and have that connection while also being sure that you can recharge, right? That you're not like overwhelming yourself.
Yeah.
Or saying, I don't have those other needs too, which might be needs for distance or space or rumination. Or
right.
Yeah. So I would say the warning that comes with that is you can still be around someone having a conversation and be fully in your head. So fives have to be really, really careful to actually like show up, engage, risk something vulnerable and not just sort of be interacting, but observing in their head.
Yeah.
It's really, it's tricky.
It's kind of a way to shield from having to expend energy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does. It can have from the outside with a five, it can have that. And it feels selfish. They feel like they have cocooned in those moments. But when a five is really present, you can feel that difference. At least for me, like I can notice that from the outside. Like, oh wow, you're here.
Mm.
And to me, I think I'm going to go back on that gentle awareness here on this one, because you did talk about that. It's figuring that out is a little different for the five. They need to be aware. So if they're if the need is overwhelming to just retreat, maybe just go meet that need and then come back refreshed, right? Whether there's a few days with family or whatever. Rather than kind of think you have to be there all the time, but you're really just not kind of there.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like
going through the motions. Almost.
Right. Right. Yeah. Where fives can kind of do that. Like you said, they're still in their head.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they're like, my body's here, I think it's good enough.
Yeah.
Because of all the expectations, fine.
Yeah.
But when a five can meet there and say, it's okay to meet my needs, I need to go, like you said, ruminate, right?
Yeah.
They just get in their head and just, this feels good. I'm alone and safe here.
Yeah.
And then go, okay, now it's time to go back out. I don't know.
Yeah. I think that's right. I picture five sort of like attaching to the thoughts the same way fours might attach to their feelings of like, it's fine to have thoughts,
yeah,
but you can sort of like attach to it too much or too long.
Yeah.
In which case it's not actually serving you mm-hmm. in the way it was meant to, mm-hmm. maybe.
Or connecting you with others.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You can just kind of distance.
Yeah. And so maybe that would be like another thing for Five Study. Like what, when was the time that you had a connection with someone, or who can you connect with this yeah. holiday season? Or are you longing to connect with? And then like, what mm. is an action you can take? Again, they're action repressed, right? So what's an action you can right. take to try to make that connection happen, to invite that connection,
yeah.
to express a need for that connection.
Yeah. Make that phone call.
Yeah.
Sit by that person at the party and just chat for a little bit.
Yeah.
Or, yeah. Ask exactly. them some questions.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Or yeah. Hey, so-and-so, I'd love to grab some time with you
yeah.
later or something.
Yeah. Tell me about what this is happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense as you say all those and the fives in mm. my life. I'm like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
I see that. I can see when that's happening and when it's not, and why that is that's good. That's really
yeah, interesting.
From the outside, I'm like, oh, that's good advice.
Yeah. I've known a number of fives, but I don't have a lot of like fives in my life that I can like observe on a regular basis. So that's helpful.
Yeah.
Here.
Well, close family member is a Quebec.
Yeah. So, yeah. Great. Okay.
It makes a lot of sense.
Okay. So sixes. For sixes, I would say notice the expectations you think others have for you. So ones, twos, and sixes all are trying to meet their needs by meeting the expectations, however they define that. So sixes definitely have that part within them too. So really for a six, if you're a six, is there a way you can let yourself off the hook for meeting those expectations, meaning sort of the external expectations or whatever you've internalized? Mm-hmm. So what might you risk if you do that? Like, in other words, what might you have to give up if you mm-hmm. let yourself off the hook? Would you have to give up control or a sense of security or predictability, you know?
That's really hard for a six, right? I mean, that anxiety piece, right? It's kind of a space, a thing for the six. I mean,
totally.
That's that I know. And so giving up.
Yeah. And the control is a way to try to keep that anxiety at bay.
Right. So, yeah. I mean, you may have more to say.
No, go for
it. But what does it look like for a six to, in little ways, to give up some of that predictability and safety, right, in this mm-hmm. season.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's the right question. I think a helpful question for sixes to ask is like, when you recognize a fear or something you're trying to do to stave off some sort of bad thing happening, like stop and ask yourself, do I really think that's going to happen?
Mm.
Like, is that really true? Do I really think that person is going to walk in the door on Christmas Day and say, I have a real problem with you, and, you know, and blow up, and like, is that really going to happen?
Right.
Or is that just kind of in my head and I'm just doing it as a just in case?
Yeah.
So knowing that distinction, like, is this realistic or is this a just in case thing, I think can be helpful.
Yeah. And I'm reading from the worst case scenario handbook.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's a perfect way to say it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, sixes are always, they're always trying to forecast for threats, predict the future. They're trying to sort of do that as a way of getting their own needs met. If they sort of follow all the rules or do everything, they'll be somehow above reproach and predict exactly what's going to happen. So yeah, do I really think that's going to happen, or am I just preparing for that sort of worst case scenario? Another thing would be sixes feel the need to let off steam. So when they don't get their needs met, sixes are part of a group of three numbers along with fours and eights, and they are, I think, called the reactionary types or reactive types or something. And they react on like an emotional level to not having their needs met.
Mm-hmm.
So sixes will feel the need to like blow off steam. And so just be aware of that if you're a six going into this holiday season, when probably you aren't going to have all your needs met and you're going to face some disappointments and some hardships. And just think, okay, if I feel this need rising up, like, what's a healthy way that I can do that? One that doesn't really hurt like people around me.
Yeah.
So when you feel yourself reacting, if you already have this plan or have thought about what you want to do to let off some of that steam, then maybe it'll kind of save you in some of those situations, save you some heartache, and save some of the people around you from that too. Yeah. I'm married to a six, so I'm hoping she's listening to that. I'm just kidding. No, she's great. She's great. So sevens, we've got just three more sevens. For a seven, if there are problems ask yourself how it truly makes you feel for seven, because
sevens don't prefer that.
Yeah. They don't want to go into the world of feelings.
Yeah.
And they want to like kind of gloss over any sort of problem. They just want to, everything's fine. Like, yeah, there's a problem, but whatever, let's move past it. But you're not actually getting to move past it that way. Cause like the only way out is through,
right?
For so much of life.
Right.
So, yeah.
Mm. And so they just want to move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
Come on, where's the next adventure?
Yeah, exactly. Sweet. That sucked. Like,
yeah.
How about something else come down the pike?
So yeah.
We can let go of that.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that would be one. Ask how a problem truly makes you feel. Another would be define what enough in the holidays means for you. So, and do it before December 31st, right? Do it like now.
Yeah.
While you're going into some of the busy parts of the season. So people will love your up energy if you're a seven. Kids will love having fun with their seven uncle who's around and going to play the games and all that stuff. But what is going to like satisfy you in this season? And then notice if it actually does, like once you do it, once you kind of identify that.
So when you say notice or define what is enough for this season and then do it, you don't mean do all the things that are enough. You mean right now, you mean define it right now before we get in. Got it.
You're right.
I messed that up.
Yeah.
You said it fine. I think I was trying to clarify in case anyone thought like I did in that. And then do all the things that you think.
Yeah. I'm glad you said that.
Define it now.
Define it now.
Before we ramp in too much.
Yeah.
Into more and more. And then.
Yeah.
Okay. And see how it makes you feel as you start doing those things you've listed, you mean?
Yeah.
As a seven. Hmm.
Yeah. Because sevens can get carried away with just like, I'm looking for whatever's going to come.
Yeah.
And hoping that it's better than whatever I have right now.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah.
So if you kind of define it in advance of like, I'm really looking forward to that thing, or even if it's not a specific event, like I'm looking forward to times of connection with this person or these people.
Or
I'm really looking forward to that activity. Then when it comes, hopefully you have more awareness to go, here it is. Here it is. And I'm going to like enjoy this. And I know that it's enough for me. And the truth is, even if something doesn't go well, like it's always enough. Like it's always enough on that sort of existential level. So just kind of knowing that and kind of telling yourself like, this is enough. Like I'm really enjoying this. This is enough in the moment. I think we'll actually like, rather than limiting you as a seven, I think it actually heightens the experience for you.
Wow.
As a seven. That's what I would say. It's kind of the opposite of what sevens are afraid of, I think.
Right. That fear. Yeah. And like, I need something more to fill it something up.
Yeah.
So if they stop and pay attention to what is actually fulfilling right now.
Yeah.
It's not going to damper it.
Right.
It's only going to fill the cup.
Yeah.
By that gentle noticing like we've been talking about, right?
Yeah.
Notice, how does this feel? Right.
Yeah.
And hopefully those are positive feelings because we're talking about these positive events or experiences that they'll have.
Yeah.
Connecting or these, you know, enjoyable, you know, events or whatever.
Yeah.
And so to pause, slow down and go, what is this? Mm. How does this feel in a good sense? And allowing that to be enough. Yeah.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
That's good. This is good angles.
Oh, good.
No.
Nice. Maybe the last thing for sevens, know that if you feel someone is asking you to stop, sort of metaphorically, like slow down. So sevens don't like to slow down, metaphorically speaking.
Don't tell a seven to do that, probably.
Yeah.
My experience.
Yeah.
They're going to need to figure that out on their own.
Right. Yeah.
That's just me talking, but.
No, that's fine. It's, I think, a good word. But so if you sort of notice that someone's asking you to kind of do that, pulling back or stopping you or pulling you into a conversation about the problems or asking you to do something you don't want to do, just know that like doing that will not harm you. The seven sort of feels like if I slow down and if I stop, something bad's going to happen or something's going to catch up to me, or it's kind of this existential angst or fear.
Dread a little bit.
Dread.
Yeah.
Oh, that's such a good word.
The deepest word. It feels like,
That's perfect. Yeah. So just like notice that that's part of you. And again, sort of like how other types, like they have that, but they're not that. Like it feels like it's a dreadful and like it's going to kill you existentially, but it's not actually going to hurt you. So I think that's really important to keep in mind.
Yeah.
Cool. So eights.
All right.
Eights. Yeah. Eights are wonderful eights. And you have some relationship.
I have dear eights in my life.
Which is great. Yeah. I love eights. I don't have a super close eight in my life, which is a shame. But
yeah. They're good.
Yeah.
Eights and ones, I've heard, you know, can be an explosive couple. I don't mean like married. I just mean like relationally, that they can just challenge, they can have challenges to do like daily things. Yeah. But the eights and ones can can get things done together. Let's say it that way. Like they can shake things up and make things happen. Like eights and ones have this. So
I love that.
Yeah. It's a very close eight in my life that has been a helpful.
Has that been your experience?
Yes. Oh. Yes, it has been. And that's so, awesome. Yeah, one of my sisters is an eight. And so we have, I love her to death, you know, but then there was like, as we both became adults a while back, there was just a lot of, wow, we can't like cook rice in the same room, or we're just going to like hate each other and nothing's going to work.
Yeah.
So realizing these little minute things, one person has to be in control and the other person can't. Mm. It just has to be that way.
Yeah.
But then, and other things, I mean, we're talking about dreaming or ideas or creating or all sorts of personal growth, like all these things, or it's just, I mean,
Symbatica.
The best conversations, good challenge, good insights, and goes back and forth. But
oh, that's great.
Yeah. With the little things, it could just, it's a little fiery.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work.
So. Oh man. That makes so much sense of my own experience. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I think I've had those. Yeah. The like normal daily stuff has been harder, I think, with eights for me. And in some ways I feel like we're like the opposite wiring of like, very like, I don't know, like over moral and like anti-moral or something. You know? It's like, we're like too obsessed with the rules, and the eights are too like, whatever, rules don't matter.
Right.
And it just like, it's like an oil and water sometimes, but I'm glad to hear your insight on how that can work in other scenarios.
Yeah. I can't remember if it was her or me who found that. I think it was her. And she's like, oh my gosh, guess what I learned? I'm like, oh, that is so helpful for us. Yeah. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
So there's a little 8-1 primer for anybody who needed it out there.
That's awesome. I love it. So eights. So for eights, I would say, you know, think about your relationships in this season. Would any of them be served by you taking a greater risk? So this would be a growing edge for eights. Because eights naturally want to sort of walk around like with this armor on, you know, metaphorically speaking, but this sort of like harder shell. And it's because on some subconscious or unconscious level, maybe conscious, but probably not, they realize that there's like this kernel, this really vulnerable, tender, like precious sort of kernel part of themselves and of everyone.
Yeah.
And they just feel like it's too great a risk to actually show that because it's so precious. And so what would it look like for you to think about your relationships and go, well, who can I risk that with? Who would be a safe person? And knowing that doing that is not actually like it's a risk and that it feels uneasy, but it's actually going to be really healthy for you. Like it's going to pay dividends in the long run for your own growth and your own journey if you can do the work of growing up in that particular way. And we all have our own ways of growing up.
Oh, right.
But for you, growing up in that particular way. So, you know, where is it wise to have your armor on this holiday season, because not everyone can be trusted with that precious part of you? And where is it simply like your safe default and therefore not actually serving you?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's just a good thing.
Just your default mode of protection.
Yeah.
That's a good distinction. Yeah.
Yeah. So a second one would be, you know, to develop a plan beforehand for when you find yourself really reacting. So again, eights and sixes and fours are this reactive type. So when you react, develop a plan. So like, if you can sense it in the moment, develop a plan to give into it or express your reaction or something else, maybe to feel it more fully, to process it with your significant other or one of those safe people who you can be somewhat vulnerable with, a trusted counselor. And if you don't have that, like journaling, like to process it with yourself, but sort of like get it out in a concrete way, and kind of give yourself the gift of processing, not just unconsciously thinking about it, but consciously thinking about it will be tremendously helpful for you.
And so, at the beginning of that list, you said feel it, give yourself some time to feel it or something.
Yeah. Like, like basically, are you going to, when you find yourself reacting, are you going to give into that or express it externally, which is what it's like the default mode of like, okay, hey, I have this problem and I'm going to tell you about it.
Right. Right. And it's you.
Right. And it involves you.
Right.
Or it involves what I want, which involves you.
Right. You know? Right.
Or which would be more of the default mode, or can you choose something healthier, more positive, which would be like, hey, I'm going to sit with my feeling. I'm going to like explore that.
Yeah.
I'm going to take 5 minutes to just think about what am I feeling specifically? Like do a check-in, sachet, like, am I happy? Am I sad? Am I frustrated? Am I angry? Mm. So do those things or externally process it, which would be maybe a next step or a better step to kind of concretely kind of get it out in some way. Mm. I think that those are stretches.
Those are some good practical things though.
Yeah. And then I think when we talked about this, you had something you wanted to mention.
I've got a thought on this one. Just that eights need for challenge, just to challenge everything.
Yeah, that oppositional energy.
Right, which is what I love about eights, right? I mean, like, which is what I love about my, I can be like, I can say all these things and I'm like, I have to say ahead of time because she's aware, healthy eight, you know? And so she's aware, like, I can really, you know, do you really want to know what I think? And I'm like, oh yeah, that's why I call you. Cause I want you to challenge me now. Right. Mm-hmm. So there's all this energy. Mm-hmm. And tell me where that's this dumb way to think about this. Why don't you think about it that way? I'm like, oh yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Like you said earlier, challenge the ego, but respect the integrity. Like I think a healthy eight does that in a phenomenal way. Mm, wow. I just feel like a healthy eight is really able to do that with a real honest intention with it. Mm-hmm. So that anyways, that challenge energy, that oppositional, like I guess I would say to an eight that feels like they, you know, they're in feeling that, find some good space for that, versus shame it or put it away. Or I know a lot of women who are eights feel like they, you know, and I read this on different groups I'm a part of and different things, but women who are eights just feel like this is not how I'm supposed to be. You know, women are all the crap from corporate to church to just culture and, you know, women eights aren't the same, you know? I'm just here to say, I'm a big champion of women's eights, women who are eights. You belong, you are supposed to be just like you are. And if you could see my fists waving in the air right now, it's just such an important message to get out there, especially for, you know, believing women, Christian women.
Sort of the double whammy of expectations, cultural expectations.
Yes, the church, the culture, the what is the perceived biblical expectation. So anyways, that was a rabbit trail. Was a little fiery for me. But like when you feel that need, you know, like there is this oppositional, this challenging energy that just comes out. So rather than trying, you know, these holidays, let me see if I can just put that away or pretend like it doesn't exist or shame myself out of it because the people I'm going to be around don't appreciate it, or I don't really know yet how to be healthy with it entirely in this particular situation. Affirm that part and become curious about where it can have space, maybe before or after a particular setting or event you're going to be in, you know, or challenging yourself within that. How can I, you know, I challenge myself to listen without saying something like this to this person, right? And that's the challenge. Like it invert that challenge a little bit, but use that, right? Rather than just there is a place for transforming it, but I think there's a way we can shift it too and use that really good energy in a different manner than we're used to thinking of it, rather than, you know, I just have to confront these things. I'm gonna almost confront myself in this and see if I can challenge and help so-and-so, even though I can't stand for whatever reason, you know, this particular way of whatever. I don't know. You know, I'm making that stuff up, but whatever the particulars are in your life, use your challenger energy and see if it can find a healthy space to help you cope when you really know that this particular situation isn't going to be a helpful place for that.
Yeah. So, yeah, I like that a lot. I mean, it just makes me, for all the Enneagram types, like the task is to use the God-given energy of your type, like the good, the truest part of your type. The goal is not to kill that or lessen it or hide it. The goal is just to, like use it in the proper way.
Yeah.
Right. And so for that challenging, like the goal is not to kill that part of you.
Right.
Or deny that it exists because it's always going to be there. But,
and it's good.
Yeah. And it's good. But to like find that, like, what is that healthy outlet for that? Like, where are you called to use that challenging energy? Yes. And where is that going to serve you and serve other people?
Right. Too? Yeah, and maybe putting these two together, like the vulnerability and the risk that you talked about at the beginning in this challenge, maybe you have a safe friend. You can go, I need to use this in a different way on this thing I'm doing with my family from 4 to 8 on Sunday. Can you help me? Because it's hard. This is how this generally comes out. This is where it doesn't work well for me. This is who I usually hurt, right? You know me. Do you have some good ways that I can use this beforehand? Maybe you could call me at 3 with a problem you have and I can challenge you and help you with it and get some of that out and move on. I don't know. You know, every person's different, but coupling that risk that you're talking about and vulnerability, you know, with where that fits, you know. So I don't know.
I love that.
I'm just thinking, but
I love that. Yeah. I think that was our best type yet.
All right.
So then the last, but not least, the 9s. So I'd say, for 9s, the perpetual problem for 9s is we talk about their like chief, compulsion or the chief obstacle they have is like a falling asleep to self. It's this false belief that they've internalized, as we all internalized various things, but 9s have internalized, I don't really matter that much. It's better to go along and get along. If I risk actually showing up and being a person, like I have needs or I have desires or I have preferences, I have opinions, those things can all, as soon as you start doing that, they could possibly conflict with someone else's opinions and needs and preferences.
Right.
And so for 9s, they've just learned to not risk that. But so what would it look like then in this holiday season to not just sort of go through the holidays? I tend to think off the top of my head, I think 9s probably deal with the holidays the best, quote unquote best, according to like secular standards.
From the dynamic of the group room and people.
Because they're mostly copacetic throughout the whole thing. They go along with everything and they're really good at suppressing sort of any sort of internal reaction or external like stimuli that might be a discomfort to them. They're really good at kind of pushing both ways.
Yeah.
And so, so it looks like they handle it really well, but the thing is that doesn't actually serve you. Not just like, hey, you could live a better life, but like that builds, like you're literally creating this like vault. I picture like, it's like the Harry Potter thing. I don't know if you've seen one of those movies,
but I've seen
like,
them all.
Okay.
But it's been like 10 years. Yeah. So
they have there's a scene where they have a vault and there's some sort of spell cast on like the treasure that like when you touch it, it starts multiplying and everything that the multiplied piece touches. So it starts like the vault starts filling up and they're like in danger of like drowning. And not just for 9s, but I think for all of us, like whenever you suppress things, like it just builds. It just builds and builds and builds until you actually go in and address whatever it is. So for 9s, the trick then is like to think about like who's actually waiting. Now let's frame it this way. Why not show up this holiday season? It's your holiday season. So why not show up? People want to see more of you. They really do.
Yeah.
And not everyone's going to be safe to like start having opinions with, you know, if you have family dynamics of siblings or parents or friends who aren't used to you coming to the table with a different political preference or whatever it is, that's going to be hard, but you can be discerning about that. And so who's waiting for you to show up and like what part of you is waiting for you to show up? Because 9s do have those moments where they get upset that people have overlooked them, people didn't check in with them. They didn't actually get to say what they wanted or needed and they've been overlooked. And so getting in touch with that and taking the risk of showing up, I think is really healthy.
Yeah. That's all really good. I am married to a 9. So I can hear all of that. And so I get all the wonderful benefits of that. I mean, of being married to a nine, which is really great.
Yeah.
But yeah, all of those things, that unhealthy self-forgetfulness of the nine as a special way of playing out in their own.
Yeah.
In their own world.
Yeah. So. Do you, as a one, do you identify more with your sort of like nine wing or the two?
More of a two wing.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I'm the opposite. I'm more of the nine.
Are you?
Yeah. You're the warmer one. I'm the cooler.
Yeah. One. Of the ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The less personable one. Right.
Yeah. I definitely, sorry. I've wondered if it would be easier. And he identifies more with his eight wing than a one wing. So we're next to each other, but we
like
go the opposite. Yeah, we trend opposite. So
that's so interesting.
So when he does get in touch, he finds his not is eight too.
Yeah.
Which is good, which I think is really helpful.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Well, and that's that energy that you talked about of actually being very forceful when combined with your energy.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. It would be a good good thing.
That's cool.
So you have some practical things for nines, or what do you?
Yeah. So, you know, something I think nines could do is, you know, when something goes wrong, you can, practically speaking, again, ahead of time, so do it now, start thinking like when something goes wrong this holiday season, is there a way that I'd like to handle it other than suppressing it? Like what would feel like a good way to handle it? And it might not be if you aren't in the rhythm of speaking your truth, it might not be to speak up and say, hey, that really, you know, I can't believe you would ever say that. You're awful. Something like that. Right. But there might be a way, like, I know when something goes wrong, I want to check in with someone. Or when something goes wrong, I want to journal about it. Or when something that is productive and moving you again toward action, which is what you suppress. Action,
yes.
Yeah, action and not just comfort. So nines are always going to want to go to the escapist comfort. And I, as someone with a strong nine wing, I identify with that. So not just when something goes wrong, I want Netflix or I want my bathtub or I want a drink.
Yeah.
None of that stuff. When something goes wrong, what is an action that's like moving you forward through that interaction, not past it?
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really, that's really good. Like if I'm uncomfortable when someone, whatever, that discomfort comes to mind, at least as a word for the nine, like, as I feel like I challenge that a little bit. If you're uncomfortable, then, you know, what does that look like to live with that discomfort and get it out and not be like, well, therefore there's something wrong with you. You have to bear the brunt of it, nine.
Yeah.
You have to handle that. I like that the metaphor used with Harry Potter was treasure and like coins because it's like all that stuff in there. You know, from my outside looking in at the nine, like it's good. It's valuable. Like this is valuable stuff.
Wow.
And it feels like being, for me, you know, being close to a nine that, that they treat it as if it's not, that has no value. Like that's just stuff to be kind of sloughed off and keep going.
Yeah.
And it's not like, this is the treasure of your life that wakes you up. Right.
You're blowing me away with this.
I love that you use that metaphor because I can't remember the scene. I'll have to go back and watch it, which we've been talking about. We should go back and do that again.
I think it's one of the part sevens or something.
Is it? Okay. Yeah, we watched, we did like a whole marathon 10 years ago, but that was before kids. So that's hard to do now. Right. But this is such valuable stuff. And for a nine to really honor that in themselves. And I like that you gave ways to gently do that. Because for a nine, they really need to be on board. Because a nine can sit here and listen, nines, you might be doing this now. Sure, yeah, I'll try that. That might be good. I'm going to look like I'm agreeing with you, but inside I'm actually just going, And so finding a way that you can be on board. What do you, what's really going to work for you? And be really honest about that.
Yeah.
And don't just say yes to appease anybody else, because it doesn't matter, because it's your treasure that's in there.
Yeah.
And I won't get all ooey gooey, but
Well, and you know, I don't know if you're a nine listening to this, I don't know what you're doing right now, but really don't put it off for tomorrow.
Yes.
Put it off for tomorrow if you can help it, because it's easier to go, I want to do that and I will do it tomorrow. And then I know it in my own pattern, it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And we're like 3 weeks out. So
yeah,
it's all hands on deck. Do the work now.
The action.
Yeah. 10 minutes. Take 10 minutes of reflection.
Yeah.
So
that's good.
Yeah. So maybe a last thing is for nines to think about would be, you know, if you find yourself at odds with someone, either really at odds or even just having a different view or experience, spend some time thinking about the people with whom that might not be safe to share, you know, mm-hmm. that difference. Some people won't be able to hear that you have your own thoughts and feelings, as we said earlier, mm-hmm. Because that likely hasn't been the pattern that you've established. But kind of make a mental list of those people right now, like, you know, Uncle Joe, Cousin Elizabeth, like those people mm-hmm. probably can't handle what I'm thinking or feeling. And that's, mm-hmm. that's fine. But everyone else, here's the third practice, assume that they can take the real you. Mm. And that they actually want the real you.
Yeah.
I promise you, if they're one of those people for you, that safe person, they want the real you.
Yeah.
They might be surprised when you show up,
right?
But they want the real you.
Yeah. They'll also feel more connected to you
yeah.
and get to know you more. And don't worry, they'll like you.
Yes.
Like, I know that's hard. I feel like for a nine doesn't really get that, but
yes,
they will.
Yeah.
They already do.
Yeah.
Right? That's not going to change. So, yeah.
For sure.
Those are all good. This cool. is good. Sam, you've done a really good job in preparing all this.
Thanks.
I just want you all to know, Sam prepared all this and I got to sit here and just say things. So well, it was really good.
I love going into the stuff. It's not,
yeah.
And it's not Enneagram gospel. It's just yeah. my own reflections. Yeah. But I think hopefully there are some pieces there for you if you identify with one of these types that
yeah.
might serve you in this kind of busy and relationally tricky season.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah. So peace to you all. And we will be back for season two. It's
We're
been an extended break. We've just...
Which has been nice.
Yeah, it's been good.
I should say it's needed. It's been needed, yeah. even though we thought we'd be back sooner.
Yeah.
And the extended break has been needed. And I
yeah.
think it's been good.
It has been. So we'll be back.
Thanks exciting for checking things to come.
In. Yeah.
Ho, ho, ho!